Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And they say, oh, Trump doesn't have experts. Let me tell you, I do have experts, but I know what's happening. China's not, and look at the experts we've had, okay? Look at the experts. All these people have had experts. You know, I've always wanted to say this. I've never said this before. With all the talking we all do, all of these experts, oh, we need an expert. The experts are terrible.
That was then candidate Trump at an April 2016 campaign stop in Wisconsin. Well, on the Brian Lehrer Show, we regularly bring you conversations with the most intelligent, most informed guests possible. You might even call them experts who can shed unique insight, we hope, on the most pressing issues of the day. However, the election of Trump, whose victory did defy experts' predictions, was itself in many ways a repudiation of elitism, intellectualism, and expertise. So to better understand the problem with experts, of course, we need an expert. Nassim Nicholas Taleb is perhaps the world's foremost anti-elitist financier, anti-intellectual, and yes, anti-expert expert. His books include The Black Swan, Anti-Fragile, and his latest, Skin in the Game, Hidden Asymmetries in Daily Life. Always the contrarian, Taleb has dedicated his new book to an unlikely duo, Ron Paul and Ralph Nader, and in it he defends the courage of those with skin in the game, from entrepreneurs to Donald Trump, while stridently criticizing the cowardice of doctors and journalists who he largely views as charlatans. Nicholas,
that's actually what? Not quite accurate, because I don't defend Donald Trump, and I describe his success, and yes, I don't attack the doctors. They have skin in the game.
Okay, right, the book, so. I'll let you explain that further. Yes. After I just finish introducing you by saying you are NYU Tandon School of Engineering professor, as so everybody knows that, and author and advisor to Universa Investments. And again, the title of the new book is Skin in the Game, Hidden Asymmetries in Daily Life. So, about journalists. Yes. You call them intellectual Philistines, right? Intellectual some, yet some. Philistines.
No, some. and again, I mean, let me describe my position. I'm not anti-expert. As a matter of fact, I'm pro-expert. but there's a difference. This morning I visited my dentist, and look, my teeth are still there, okay? So a dentist, you can tell if a dentist is an expert at dentistry or not. You can tell if a carpenter is an expert. Look, this table is very smooth. The carpenter did a good job. So, but there are domains, and that was in The Black Swan, and that was applauded by intellectuals. There mm-hmm. are domains mm-hmm. in which the expert and not an expert. Mm-hmm. And the tableau I made in The Black Swan still persists today. I said, whenever you're dealing with macro variables, something abstract, with no reality, continuous reality check, you're going to be confronted with a class of people who are not just not experts, but at the same time, they derive their prominence from peer reviewing. So it becomes a very circular system. In other words, the approval of others. And you have what I call monoculture. So when it comes to journalism, I consider myself in the same class as journalists because I write books. Mm-hmm. But my point is that any position you take that means to enhance your status or fitness in a community without taking any risk is dangerous. So I've noticed journalists tend to have a monoculture. That's bad. Journalism is about risk-taking to go against power, because that's what we have. We need a check against power. And in the past, that's how it came about.
And you argue in this respect that journalists purport to be objective, but without skin in the game, tend to be vulnerable to groupthink.
Groupthink, monoculture, and there's something. The problem is whenever peers are reviewing you, not reality or not your real market, you end up having, as an objective function, fitness in that group. Okay, and fitness and it can be very dangerous in these groups, because you can have circular reasoning yes. that persists for a long time.
Do you think that's true in academia too? Because that's where we usually hear the term peer review, but okay. It's usually meant as a high standard of many experts, actual experts in their field, reviewing a new study that a professor might purport to be scientifically valid.
In hard science and STEM, no. STEM because there's a check of reality, just as I was talking about a dentist, particularly in professional school, and definitely not, it doesn't exist in medicine and engineering. In medicine, there's a reality check. So, but you have fields without such reality checks, okay? For example, economics, macroeconomics. Accounting has a reality check, but economics, abstract, because you can't. So, for example, in The Black Swan, I said that a weather forecaster has to be an expert, but someone who discusses the climate may be a fraud.
Yes.
You see? So it's the same thing with fields. Like sociology, you don't know what it is, okay?
And are you arguing in this respect that news spread by social media might be more honest, more accurate, as well as more democratic?
And more can be wrong, can be right. But there's no no monoculture in social media. Or you have a variety of monocultures so you can see what's going on.
Though I think a lot of people are coming to feel in the immediate context of what we're learning at the Zuckerberg hearings, but a lot of things that precipitated the Zuckerberg hearings, that the one-time web concept of the wisdom of the crowd sifting truth for a lot of users is discredited as utopian. Where are you on that?
Okay, I mean, again, to go back to my tableau from The Black Swan, there are domains where the wisdom of the crowd works. Okay, and there are domains where it doesn't work. Okay, you can manipulate people, but not forever. Okay, so traditionally, the reason why social media is more in line with the way news used to be transmitted in the past, I mean, we only went through one phase in our history of having to be a recipient of news without being conveyors as well. And social media allowed people to transmit news as well as receive news. Transmitting will have distortions, but I think that the noise does filter out, and reliability of people is something that people take into account when they consider the news. The first time someone can fool you, they can't fool you a second time. That sort of thing, same as in social reality, I mean a better reality, not social media. So I discuss in the book how news used to be transmitted, and effectively you have skin in the game in the sense that if you give someone unreliable news, he or she will not be very happy receiving news again from you. And you lose your status in the community.
And that's the feedback from
exactly feedback from
social
reality.
Media.
Exactly from
yes.
Social media. I mean, social media. I mean, my book is really when I say this is Ron Paul and Ralph Nader.
I was going to get to that.
Because both of them fought the power over individuals. You see, either coming from the bureaucrats of the state. The state is something abstract. People forget that the state is composed of bureaucrats. In the case of Ron Paul, or large corporation. In the case of Ralph Nader, and I make no distinction between them.
So what Ralph Nader wanted was bureaucracy to regulate the corporate power.
No, but what I made a distinction there when I said the Ralph Nader who allowed us to sue large corporations, the tort laws of Ralph Nader, not
yes,
Ralph Nader who likes bureaucracy.
I gotcha.
So basically, so you have the existence of a court system. So and skin in the game, and to go back to the notion of expert, it's the tableau matches skin in the game. Skin in the game means that you have something to lose if you're wrong, and it's very hard to be a full expert in a domain where you have something to lose when you're wrong.
Listeners, any questions for Nassim Nicholas Taleb, whose new book is Skin in the Game, Hidden Asymmetries in Daily Life, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. To take a very, let's say, something different and concrete example, you describe the new renovated Metro North cars in this book and why you're not a fan. Why are you not a fan?
Okay, no, because we have a class of architects and decorators who derive, again, their status from judgment by other architects, not by their users. And that was rare in history. So they renovated those trains. They look beautiful, very pretty, of course. It's like buildings made to impress other architects. But when you're trying to put the coffee on the ledge for some reason, you can't do it anymore. And as that and a few other details make the train much less comfortable than it was.
So there you go.
That's renovation. Renovation not done organically with skin in the game, but done top down by
designed to impress other designers.
Exactly. So another example I'm going to give you about restaurants. You have awards in the restaurant business, the best this, the best that, best service, best that. And it's given usually by restaurateurs to other restaurateurs. And of course, by the time there is the ceremonial event for the awards, of course, many of these restaurants are out of business. But restaurants luckily deliver good food not because restaurateurs are charged by other restaurateurs, but because they're charged by you every time you go to buy a meal.
Which raises the sticky question of whether good and popular are necessarily the same thing.
Well, I mean, you want something to survive. There's the contact with reality. If you give people what they don't want, I mean, visibly, you can't impose your taste on people and do it for a long time without some kind of distortion in the system.
Right. How about the idea in the title that I'm not sure if we've gotten to explicitly, hidden asymmetries in daily life. Why asymmetries and why hidden?
Because if I make a mistake and you pay the price, not me, and I used the bankers, Robert Rubin, I call the Robert Rubin trade. When he makes money, he keeps a bonus.
Former Clinton Treasury Secretary.
And former Vice Chairman of Citibank, who pocketed $120 million bonuses. And when he's right, he makes some money. When he's wrong, you and I, taxpayers in New York or in
the States. Was I wrong when I said Goldman Sachs? It was
He was both. No, he was both, of course.
Yeah.
But I took that period at Citibank, and Citibank was insolvent. He made $120 million. Citibank ended up insolvent. He didn't return the money. So you don't have the downside. That's an asymmetry. And I brought back that asymmetry to the Hammurabi days. Practically the first law we have on the books, that if the building collapses, the architect is responsible. All right, he can't walk away, or he or she cannot walk away from the cost. So if you own your own risk. In other words, not be asymmetric by inflicting risk on others.
Let's take a phone call. Gabe in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gabe.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay. What's your question?
Okay, good. I want to ask Professor Taleb how much he deadlifts and if he uses straps or not.
I don't use straps. My peak deadlift was, let me make it public. It was 400. That was my peak deadlift, but I'm not there.
How did we get into that? Is that you write in your book about how much you lift, that just something he knows about?
The cover of the book has an asymmetric deadlift.
Okay.
And does that represent something? Yeah, it's sort of like when you talk about, it started in Anti-Fragile, when I talk about something, I'm obligated. I cannot tell you what you should be doing, or I cannot give advice unless I can just tell people what I do for a living. And that the story of the deadlift came about.
Paul in Greenwich, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. So I had a comment relating to your guests lumping together of medicine with some of the other sciences like engineering and physics. And as a medical researcher and a medical school professor, I recognize that's a pretty common misconception, that we like to think that medicine is as precise and externally validatable as those other sciences, but it's a misconception.
I actually write that in the book, and I've written about that in Anti-Fragile, that medicine is not an exact science. But the point is that a medical professional cannot harm you for a long time, unlike a macroeconomist or someone, a policymaker in Washington. And the second point I make there is that I make a distinction between public health policies and where the statistical effect is hidden, or some drugs being promoted. So it's discussed in Anti-Fragile and Skin in the Game. That distinction is made. But I wanted to keep insisting that at least a doctor or a surgeon is accountable for his or her mistakes. Okay.
Going back to those public health policy
mix,
they are actually not, and they are actually capable of causing grave harm by well-meaning overinterpretations of what the data are.
Yeah, no, definitely. I don't put these people in a skin in the game category. It's discussed like, and you have 60-70 pages of that inserto, which is a collection of all the books, and exactly making your point.
All right. So no disagreement there.
No disagreement.
I love how in this conversation we can go from, you know, the serious medical consequences of bad interpretations of public health policy to Richard and Park Slope, who I think is going to talk about the design of coffee cups. Richard, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was interested in the criticism of the coffee cup ledges on Metro North trains. It may be that the person the architect was serving was the train manufacturer and runner who doesn't want the coffee cups put down at all, because when they're put down and the train moves, the coffee spills and they have to clean it up. Somebody leaves their coffee cup behind, they have to clean it up. So what they want people to do is to hold their cup of coffee instead of putting it down on the ledge. The other problem with criticizing experts is that sometimes experts believe people. If a voter is ashamed of what they're going to do, then they lie about it. So if your voter is lying to you because they don't want to admit why they're voting, whether it's racism or anti-feminism or whatever, if they don't want to have to explain that, then they're going to mislead you about it, and you're going to be misled.
Richard, thank you.
The first comment is, okay, I can't read it because there are possible interpretations why the architect, or in this case, the decorator, you know, had a hidden
bad
agenda.
Coffee cup
design. Yeah, of course. But in general, this is an anecdote, not a rule. But the general rule is that effectively, if you're not a user of whatever you're doing, the prime user, you're going to have distortions. As to the second one,
what was it again, Richard?
What was the second point, Richard? Sorry, I was writing down. Go ahead, Richard.
When you criticize the experts who didn't get the electoral
voting, of course, no, but I'm saying is that if someone lies to the expert, there's an error somewhere, and an expert is supposed to say either integrate that in his or her analysis or not give us a result. I mean, you're responsible for the product that you're selling, even if somewhere along the food chain someone has cheated you, you see.
So in our last – and thank you for your call, Richard. In our last minute or so, how much do you think that what you're writing about in Skin in the Game is what's responsible for the kind of alienation in America that even led to the election of Donald Trump?
There is something to it, although I didn't think of Donald Trump running when I wrote the first chapters. But I had noticed that progressively with modernity, that you had more and more what I call the empty suits running the show. This was in the Black Swan, but I noticed one thing when I saw Donald Trump.
And we have 10 seconds.
Yes, when I saw Donald Trump running against other people, I noticed that he was playing on the fact that he had skin in the game, whether he's a good, you know, actor or genuine, that I'm not commenting, and people detected that.
Yes.
So the next president would be someone with skin in the game, hopefully.
Nassim Nicholas Taleb's new book is Skin in the Game, Hidden Asymmetries in Daily Life. And if you want to see him in person, he'll be at the Barnes & Noble Business Breakfast tomorrow at 7:30 a.m. That's at the Barnes & Noble, 555 Fifth Avenue, between 45th and 46th Streets. Reservations are required for that one. We'll link to the site for more information if you want to have breakfast with Nassim Nicholas Taleb tomorrow morning. And thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks.